Hey, it's therapist and relationship coach Micah Ross, and this is the How to Talk About It podcast. My training did not prepare me for the myriad of ways that ADHD can impact relationships. I left my master's and PhD program with minimal knowledge of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and I really thought that mostly it was a disorder that impacted productivity and looked like disruptive boys in a classroom. It's so much more than that. First of all, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a terrible name. People with ADHD do not have a general deficit of attention. They have a deficit of attention when it comes to things they do not find interesting, but they can hyperfocus on tasks that are of interest and, I am quite certain, can and do outperform neurotypicals when this is the case. This is why I find our kiddo with an ADHD diagnosis deep in intricately designing every detail of her brother's new room that does not even have drywall yet, mind you, despite the fact that she is a mountain of biology, trig, and Spanish homework. She wants to be an interior architect someday. It would seem she's on the right path. Second, and this is huge, anger issues stemming from emotional dysregulation, while noticeably missing from the diagnostic criteria for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, or ADD, are a fundamental part of the ADHD experience for a significant number of children and adults. Even when controlling for related comorbid conditions, individuals with ADHD experience disproportionate problems with anger, irritability, and managing other emotions. When our ADHDer was in middle school and homeschooling in the pandemic, it became clear she had a harder time staying on task than her younger siblings. But we had not ever heard a peep from school about this. This didn't make me wonder if she had ADHD. She was still doing pretty well in school. She had always been a pretty fearless kid and toddler. And when people would describe typical boy behavior, I would be like, that sounds more like my daughter. I thought people were too stuck in their perceived notions of what girl behavior should look like and what boy behavior looked like. I still do. This also didn't make me wonder if she had ADHD. It was one day while I was perusing the internet on the toilet, TMI, that I came across an article titled, "People with ADHD Self-Medicate with Conflict and Drama." That did it. That one sentence seemed to make a whole lot of our home life make sense. Despite being one of the most dazzling children I'd ever met, she could compulsively poke the people in our household. Sometimes it was uproariously funny. A lot of times it wasn't and got her into trouble. No matter how many reward and discipline systems were in place, it was like she couldn't not do it, especially when tired and or low on dopamine, I'm assuming. ADHD brains have less access to dopamine. Since her diagnosis, we've learned a lot about the ADHD brain. Professionally, through this new lens, I've watched ADHD-related relationship issues play out in my office with couples over and over again. And while the list of things I listen for is long and often overlaps with neurotypical relationship issues, I can often hear a constellation of things like sensitivity to sound, being quick to anger, feeling like the person is rigid or struggles with flexibility, all-or-nothing thinking, like if they aren't the best, they're the worst. They might feel perceived rejection more deeply than most, which might look like being quick to defend. After hearing a few of these in those initial sessions, I ask, I know it sounds weird, but do either of you have an ADHD diagnosis on board? And despite this sounding like an odd constellation of struggles, I am right. Almost every single time. That list was not exhaustive, but you catch my drift. And listen, this isn't doom and gloom. I think when we can name things, we can change things. And I've got quite the guest to help us tease this out. ADHD coach Brooke Schnittman is an esteemed expert in the field of ADHD management and support. With over two decades of experience, Brooke has worked closely with thousands of individuals with ADHD and is dedicated to empowering them to overcome challenges and achieve their full potential. She's the author of the book, Activate Your ADHD Potential, which we will put a link to in the show notes, and also her podcast, Successful with two L's, with ADHD. At her company, Coaching with Brooke, she and her team work to empower individuals with ADHD, help them break through barriers, gain essential tools, and achieve their personal, academic, and professional goals.
But I've been following Brooke for a while, and I know she has personal experience with ADHD, and lots of it. And that's where we start.
From what I know about you, from following you on the internet and listening to some of your podcasts, is that you have a personal experience with ADHD as well.
I do. Late diagnosed ADHDer here in 2019, and that was after spending 15 years working with ADHDers. I finally saw it in myself as an adult after I was working online and trying to shift my attention from, you know, talking to a client online and doing my notes and going back and forth. It started connecting for me. And then, of course, I then met my husband, who was undiagnosed at the time, and my two stepsons, who were also undiagnosed. So we are one big ADHD family.
And how old are your stepsons?
I'm 10 and 13.
Yeah. Yeah. So in school, I was just telling you, I'm a licensed professional counselor with specialties in marriage and family counseling. And, you know, we learned basically what was in the DSM. And at that time, early 2000s, you know, I recall being taught nothing about how ADHD could potentially impact relationships. And like you're saying that you were in the field working really closely and in depth with people with ADHD. But I think it's so much harder to see, and it can be so nuanced, and it can be different from person to person to person to person. So it's not what I was taught.
Yep.
And I think we had a kiddo that I realized within the pandemic, I saw some impulsive and compulsiveness, and I was like, okay. And we got her a diagnosis. But it's so interesting because when we did the Vanderbilt scale with teachers, so when you get a diagnosis for a kiddo or even an adult, there are questionnaires sent to people who might know the person. And all the teachers came back, their reports were like, absolutely not. She does not have any of these issues. And so it's...
Was she inattentive?
And not that they saw, which I thought was really, really interesting.
That is really interesting. It is so subjective to who is filling out the forms.
Mm-hmm.
That happened with me as well. When I was going for my diagnosis, I had the ASRS for the adult ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I gave it because once you get diagnosed as a young adult, anything over the age of 15 or 17, rather, you're taking the adult test, right?
Yeah.
So I gave it to my mom, my best friend, my dad, my sister, my aunt, and my mom and my aunt, who have known me forever, like answered it in a way that showed I didn't have ADHD. So I was like, I'm not using your surveys. I'm going to be using everyone else. Because sometimes people like who don't see what you're feeling or experiencing or have their own blockage, right?
Yep.
Might not notice your symptoms as they actually exist.
And it seems like in girls, it can show up really differently than it does in boys.
Yes. The racing thoughts, the anxiety and depression. I was diagnosed with both of those before ADHD, like so many women. And, you know, when you're in school, it's usually in the school age years caught by the teacher, but the teacher isn't necessarily seeing those inward thoughts. When you're looking at them, it looks like you're paying attention. They don't see the hyperactivity, which you're keeping inside of you. They see the boy out of their seat running around the classroom, calling out.
Right. Yeah. So the thing that I came across that made me realize that we might need to get one of our kids assessed, I think it was the title of an article that I had found online, and it said that people with ADHD can tend to self-medicate with conflict and drama, because conflict and drama in and of themselves are stimulants. And that made a whole lot of our home life make a lot of sense. You know, as a marriage and family therapist, I knew I was doing the things. I had read the book Siblings Without Rivalry probably 4 times, but it felt like there was this need for one of our kids to just poke, and kind of like stir the pot.
Yep.
Why? No matter how many consequences there were, or it was like it just, so yeah, that really opened my eyes to this isn't just a productivity issue. This can also come with this whole host of relationship hurdles, I guess.
Yeah, it's so funny. So with ADHD, we can seek out high stimulation environments. And if we're low on dopamine, we're looking to increase that dopamine. And how do we get that high stimulation? Well, conflict and drama, right? And then that increases the dopamine level. So when you think negatively, when you create that high conflict environment, it increases the dopamine level. Just like dopamine can be increased from getting something that is actually really rewarding to you in a positive way. So people don't think about that. They always think, oh, okay, you're going to get dopamine if you do these positive things, if people like you, but it's also the opposite, can work negatively too.
So this diagnosis with my kiddo sort of opened my eyes in a big way in terms of, you know, how ADHD is impacting relationships. And I started seeing it here, there, and everywhere, of course, with the couples that I work with. And shockingly, you know, I, of course, as a therapist mom, you know, was using all my CEUs to learn as much as I could about, you know, ADHD. And it was shocking to me how much my clients didn't know, those who had a diagnosis for many decades, about how this might be impacting them in their relationships, how they might be, you know, more sensitive to criticism, or they might have bigger feelings or reactions, or, you know, I love that the rejection sensitivity dysphoria is, I don't even know what to call it, because I know it's not anything that's clinical.
In the DSM-5, yeah.
Right. But I feel like it's a term that so many people can relate with. So what, I don't even know where to start. I feel like there's so many things that I want to talk about, but maybe this quickness to big feelings is a good place to start. What do we need to know about that?
Sure. Sure. So again, like, we have difficulty managing our emotions and regulating our emotions. So with the quick to big feelings that you talk about, if we have emotional dysregulation, we're experiencing emotions a lot more intensely, right? And having difficulty returning and down regulating to that baseline. So then we get into a state that's more triggering and harder to regulate our emotions. Another thing with that is we can have, like, and I know, you know, it's something that we might talk about, but like, we could have communication issues. We can have difficulty in our executive functioning, and all of those things impact our emotions.
Yeah. And those, I mean, and those big feelings are very real. I've been saying something over and over again to my daughter lately, which is, your feelings are valid. It's the response that's getting you into trouble. Like, that's where we need to do some massaging. Like, the feelings are valid. But yeah, you know, when there's this difference, it seems, I've been saying this since the beginning of time in my practice, that, you know, it's not our differences that drive people apart. It's the degree to which those differences are not deeply understood. And it seems like when ADHD is on board with one person in a couple, there's even more of a distance, and like, I don't understand how you're feeling or why you feel that way. You know, and there can be this judgment, which then
impacts your rejection sensitivity too. It's like, you don't understand me. You know, I'm doing everything that I can, and I'm frustrated, and I feel this like deep punch in my chest or my gut, and it's going to be hard for me to come back from that.
There was something posted on Coaching with Brooke yesterday about how ADHDers will hold their pee. And I have been going back and forth since my daughter's diagnosis and realizing that ADHD is genetic. I've been looking at my husband like, is it you or is it me? Is it you or is it me? Totally was a pee holder when I was a kid. But also, I have really looked around at my extended family and been like, whoa, through this lens, things are making a whole lot more sense. So I've been very public that I didn't get into this job because I came from a perfect family. I got into this job because both of my parents have been married 3 times. And so I was very clear from the get-go, I don't have what it takes to have healthy, functional relationships. You know, I come from a family that's very reactive, that feels big, but it's not just my immediate family. It's like cousins. Like, this person isn't talking to that person. That person isn't talking to this person. And on the other side, it's all the same. And I'm looking around like, I think we're surrounded. I think we're surrounded.
We found our tribe.
Yeah. So I do find myself wondering, was I so attracted to this path because I knew that I needed the info about it to move through interactions in a way that worked?
It very much could be. You know, when I didn't know I had ADHD, I studied special education, got my master's degree, and only felt comfortable, like really comfortable with ADHD, learning disabilities, and anxiety. Like, that was my jam. Mm-hmm. And I was always dating people with ADHD too. My dad actually made fun of me one time. He's like, what is it? Like, you're a magnet to people with ADHD. I'm like, well, they're more exciting, you know? And then, of course, I found out that I had ADHD.
My daughter, when she was little, the only milestone that she didn't meet was laughing. She was slow to laugh. Took a lot for her to really giggle. And as she grew up, I was like, this friend has ADHD, that friend has ADHD. I'm like, why does she like people with ADHD so much? And then I looked around at my friends and I was like, oh. And I kept learning, you know, I'd be out to lunch and one of my friends would be like, well, I have ADHD. Okay. Yeah, they're fun. They're fun, entertaining.
They're interesting. Exactly.
Yeah. So that gets me to, like, what are the pros? I feel like, you know, a lot of times, like, I had a client last week who came in and she was like, her husband has ADHD. Kids have ADHD. None of them had any idea how much this is impacting relationships. But she was like, I came across an article that was like very, you know, kind of scary, like, be warned about, you know, really think twice about marrying somebody with ADHD.
Well, it's like sticky headlines.
Yeah. But what are the pros to being married to somebody with ADHD? Or being in a relationship?
Yeah, so I think the spontaneity, I've always been attracted to that as an ADHDer, and I have a husband who's spontaneous, who also has ADHD. The creativity, the lifelong learning, they end up almost becoming your core values too, like who you are as a person because of your ADHD strengths.
Yep.
Energy. I used to have so much energy, and I know this one's tricky, and this is not like everyone with ADHD has a lot of energy. I get it. Like, we could not have a lot of energy some days, but sometimes we do have a lot. We have creativity. We have the zest for life. We can problem solve differently. We can see the core of an issue. We're empathetic because of a lot of
big feelings,
circumstances that we've experienced in the past too. We are way hypersensitive. So we feel people's emotions very deeply. Yeah. So in my opinion, I think that it can be a gift to have ADHD. I've always looked at it that way for myself. I know that people struggle differently and some people have the resources, some people don't. But I think with anything that you have, ADHD or not, we can find the gifts in it.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I know. I mean, like I said, I've looked around and realized a lot of my friend group is, I'm surrounded and family. Yeah. So I totally agree. Okay. So going back to feeling like I was really underprepared to work with people with this diagnosis, and I really thought of it as, you know, something that kids had to deal with. And not necessarily adults. And I, you know, now I feel so silly, but
you shouldn't, because you're not alone. And I was the same way before I really understood ADHD. I mean, they don't teach you these in books. You don't learn it in therapy school. You don't learn it in special education school. Like, you need hands-on experiences and other information and experience in general to see how it manifests so differently in different people. Not a one size, this is ADHD and this is a repeatable pattern for everyone with ADHD.
Right. So another thing that wasn't included in the DSM period was anger issues stemming from that emotional dysregulation. They're just like totally not in the DSM. And I find that like to be a really important thing to know about oneself or maybe about your partner. And I don't want it to sound like doom and gloom, like this is just how it has to be. And I imagine you empowering people through coaching, you know, have some tips and tricks for people, like for when they get angry or triggered in situations or in relationships.
Yeah, we definitely can experience anger because of the frustration, right, that come with executive dysfunction. The frustration that we can feel of people not understanding us. The frustration of us not being able to communicate in a way that other people understand, right? Or perceived criticism or the rejection or the sensory overload, all of those things can lead yep. to anger, right? So one of the big things is nothing good can come when you're angry, yep. right? Like
yeah.
nothing productive happens unless, you know, you're in a life-threatening position and then you're frightened.
Saber-toothed tiger. Yep.
Right. Exactly. That. Then like we need that. Exactly. We need that response. But when we're angry and we feel the feelings, and this takes hard work because sometimes we're so hyper-focused in our anger that we don't even realize that we're angry. Right. Like I just worked with a client and she was really anxious about something and going into that negative loop. Similar to anger, like sometimes you just don't realize you're angry. So I think practice about what are you experiencing when you're angry, what's happening to your body, what are those triggers for you? Are you getting yeah. a headache? Is your back hurting? Are you tensing up? Are your shoulders like this? Are you moving towards the person? Talking about it and being more aware. Mm-hmm. So then it doesn't get to a really bad point, right?
Right.
So even having people that you trust that can say, I see you're getting angry, or, mm-hmm. you know, they give you a safe word, like you're mm-hmm. getting angry. Mm-hmm. You have to be really reflective and willing to grow when dealing with anger problems, right? And like yeah. being okay, taking it a step down. So pattern interrupts as soon as you learn you're angry.
Yep. Yes.
Whatever phase of anger it is. Just changing your environment. Of course, like, you know, you could have a rubber band in your wrist, snap it, clap. Looking at pictures that make you happy, right? Going to, when we're overstimulated with ADHD or autism or AU, right? DHD. Sometimes we just need to be by ourselves to calm down. So taking mm-hmm. yourself from the situation and removing the stimulation until you feel better. So those are the reactive strategies to deal with anger, I think.
It's really interesting that you say that, being by yourself. Some people just need some space to be able to physiologically calm down. When I was in my PhD program, I got really deep into the literature. I couldn't decide if I wanted to do my dissertation on this like yoga intervention for couples, or if I wanted to study conflict in couples. And my professors were like, why would you choose this flighty, weird yoga thing? Obviously, you want to choose this one over here. But I started looking into both. And what I found was that there were a lot of similarities. It was really fascinating. So what needs to happen in the brain to get through a conflict really successfully is that we need to be physiologically calm. And so like you said, like nothing great happens when we're angry. I'm telling people, like, people believe that we need to resolve this conflict so that we can feel better. But I'm telling people we need to feel better so we can resolve this conflict. The parts of your brain that you need to get through it are literally hijacked in those moments. Whether you have ADHD or not. But I think that this is
your executive function shut down.
Right. Right. And so I've said my whole career, like, I think that weirdly, my background in an imperfect family, I knew very early that I didn't have what it took. So I needed to get the skill. I feel like a diagnosis like ADHD and realizing that this is an issue in your life could just be like a, oh, P.S. You just might need to have more skills on board or more awareness on board. I don't feel like it's you're doomed or like a sentenced to terrible relationships.
Absolutely not. If we get the right help and the right skills and the right tools, like you said, it doesn't matter when. I mean, obviously, the earlier, the better. But if you're getting it later in life because you're now learning or you now have the resources or you now have the openness to do that, you can change your brain at any point, right? Our brain is like a muscle. We know that it can atrophy when you don't use it the right way. And you can create new neuroplasticity when you train it.
I love affective neuroscience so much.
So much.
Okay, can you tell us about RSD? What's your perspective on rejection sensitivity dysphoria?
Yeah, so many individuals with ADHD have it. They might have rejection sensitivity or they might have rejection sensitivity dysphoria. But basically, it's from this perceived perception of extreme sensitivity of rejection, criticism, failure. So you can have this perception internally, like you've created this scenario in your head where you've been rejected, or someone does something like they don't text you back, classic example, or they leave you on read, or they didn't invite you to something, or, you know, they said something literal, like my grandma has that sweater.
I would imagine that all of this within the context of social media is probably all increased and heightened and magnified.
100%. 100%. So, yeah, I actually have someone who monitors the comments in my Instagram before I see it because I can still, like, my main focus is to help ADHDers, right? I want to do that in a positive light. And there could be a message that comes up that says you're wrong or, you know, you're ugly or like you have this on your face.
Yep.
Or today I got everyone has ADHD. I don't get mad at that because some people just don't know and we need to educate them. But there are so many things on social media, people blocking you. I've had people block me that I've realized I'm like, what did I do? Or unfollow me. You know, even though I have a big number of people on Instagram, I still see certain people who like unfollow or block. Anyway, yes, social media can be really toxic.
Totally.
But
well,
you and I spoke about how amazing it could be at the same time because we can learn so much.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I've realized when those people start coming out of the woodwork to comment on posts, it usually means it's going viral. I'm like, oh, here they come. It's getting shown
Let's
to the
go.
Trolls
Let's
now.
Go. Yeah. Let's go. Come on.
Okay. So impulsiveness and distractibility. I think that the client that I told you about that found the article that was like, you know, kind of like think twice about, you know, being in a relationship with somebody with ADHD can kind of feel like not a priority. Where at one time, I think, you know, that maybe she felt very hyper-focused on.
Yeah. So with ADHD in the beginning of a relationship that you're excited about, we can hyper-focus on you to a point where it could almost look like too much, love bombing, all of the things, right? And then when things are less exciting, we might not hyper-focus the same way, and it could feel like you've done something wrong or the relationship is shifting. Now, it can shift 100%. Like, people with ADHD can jump really hard with impulsivity and hyper-focus. And I was talking to an ADHD relationship coach, and she was saying that sometimes it takes 2 years to really get to know the person. I'm sure you know this in your work, too. And, you know, after 3 months, that hyper focus can totally go away and the veil can kind of open with the person that is neurotypical, right? Like, so the ADHD person can see the non-ADHD person or even another ADHD person totally different.
Yeah.
Which is really sad.
Yeah.
It's sad for the experience that the other person is receiving.
Yeah, there's something biological in relationships that only lasts 1.5 to 2 years. And it has to do, you know, like with, it's called limerence, and there's arousal and there's that like spontaneous sex drive that women can have.
Because we get that dopamine kick and that all or nothing thinking where we don't see any of the faults. And I'm talking about men too, because of the all or nothing thinking, because of the hyper focus, you don't see so much about the other person. You just love the idea of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you say more about all or nothing thinking? So it was interesting because my daughter, she's learning to drive. And she learning, being in the process of learning has always been difficult for her. And she's got her permit. And she looked at me one day, you know, just like maybe a couple months in, and was like, if I took my driver's test today, do you think I would pass? And I knew she wanted me to say, yes, totally, absolutely. And I said, absolutely not. But you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You are learning. Like, this is not, you're either going to pass today or you're a failure. This is, right. You're on the way from A to Z and you're learning. You're exactly where,
No, it's all or nothing.
Test. Yeah. Right.
You want to run the marathon? Okay, I'm going to run it today. With no training. Yes. Yeah. It's all or nothing. We have to work really hard to see the small steps. Really hard.
Okay. So you talked about ADHD in dating. It sounds like things can happen pretty quickly in relationships when people have ADHD.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I mean, so I have been the receiver of that as a woman dating many men who have ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I have also been the person who gets excited. Right. And then you have me and my husband who both have ADHD and we're both like, yes.
Yes.
We're so excited. However, I actually worked with a dating coach and a relationship coach before I met my husband. Yeah. And something that she said, and this was, again, before I even knew I had ADHD, she was like, date multiple people. You are going to be really excited about one and you're not going to be so excited about the other. The one is going to be the exciting one and a three is not so exciting, whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't feel bad because what can happen over time is the one becomes a three and the three becomes a one.
Yeah.
Continue to really date all of the people at the same time until you know for sure that the one is the one and that they feel the same way about you.
Which I think is just good dating advice. But maybe some of us need it more than others.
It's so funny, right? Like I look back and I'm like, that was a really good strategy for anyone, but especially me with ADHD.
Yeah.
I liked that.
I was a serial monogamist. You know, I had a long-term boyfriend in high school. I had a long-term boyfriend in college. And at some point I was like, I just need to date around. And I came to that conclusion on my own, like, I'm just going to date. I don't need to be married anymore. Like, I just need to date and try and see and not fully commit and try things on. Like, I can look back and see how I would get into relationships and it would just, I mean, we would, now we're in it for months, maybe years.
Right. And didn't you say that your parents were both divorced three times?
Yep.
Like, you were kind of following the trends there. I mean, well,
I think it was the opposite of that. I think it was a mindset like I can make anything work. I can make it work. When not everything's supposed to work.
Sure. Yeah. And that's another thing. Like, since we get so excited about people right away, like, we don't want failure, right? So we want these like perfectionist tendencies so that all or nothing thinking can lead to failure because we are sometimes tricking ourselves like, I'm hyper focused on this person. This person's going to be amazing. So it has to be amazing. They have to be amazing. And then if they aren't amazing and the relationship's not amazing, then we have this failure or perceived failure.
Yes, right. So if somebody's noticing in their partner some of the things that we've talked about, distractibility or, you know, quickness to big feelings, good or bad, or, you know, that they can be perceived to be hypersensitive to criticism, you know, if they're suspecting that ADHD might be on board, are there good ways to suspect that out loud with somebody?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good question. And I've heard that come up a lot. It's like, how do you share with someone that you think that they have ADHD? And I've tried doing it impulsively as an ADHDer to some of my friends, right? And it doesn't read well, right? It needs to be thought out. But also know your audience, right? Some people are more sensitive than others. And sometimes we might say the right thing, but it might not come off the right way. So
yeah,
obviously do your homework, educate yourself, learn how ADHD and its symptoms can affect another person. Make sure that you come from a place of empathy and you explain what you're seeing in the person and your observations. And also, like, the best place would be a place where you feel the person is comfortable. There's not interruptions. There's not stressors. And you want to talk just like you would with any difficult conversation. Come from a place of, like, I statements, right? Try to talk about the symptoms of it and not necessarily label it as, like, you have ADHD because blah, 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 blah.
Not like you're this, you're that, you do this and you.
Exactly. Come from a place of empathy. Like, I notice you seem to get really distracted sometimes. I'm wondering if it might be something we can look in together. So, you know, you're showing that care and that support and that empathy.
Yeah. And depending on where the relationship is, if my husband and I's relationship is not in a great place, or we've been, you know, there's lots of unresolved issues under the relationship rug and we've got some poop colored lenses on for each other, I might not be the person that can say, hey, I think I'm noticing some things. I think it totally depends on, like, where the relationship is, like, how you could 100%. Deliver it. Yeah, where the relationship is probably matters too. And it's a really sensitive subject, and
it is.
Do it really delicately and with empathy.
With empathy, and you also have to know the other person too, and, like, how they receive information. So, you know, if you are working together and maybe they like graphics or like quick bites of information, send them to an Instagram page that has that you can trust, right? If they are more analytical, give them an article that has a lot of data on it and statistics and see if maybe they can relate to it. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Those are great tips. Those are really great. With your business, your coaching business, I want to give you some time to tell us, like, what you all offer. How do people work with you? Who do you work with? Where do they live?
We work with the lifespan of ADHD. So I have a team of coaches. We work one-on-one and in groups for students, adults, parents, children. And we are global. So we've been in business since 2018. We've worked with thousands of clients in more than 25 countries worldwide. So people can find us on coachingwithbrooke.com or on our Instagram page, coachingwithbrooke.
Yeah, which has a ton of great tips.
Thank you. And if they come to our Instagram page, they can DM us, Micah, your name. Uh-oh. And we can give them a free ADHD manual that they can download and get more information about ADHD. But yeah, we start with where the client is, find out what their unique needs are. Is it that they need more about ADHD awareness and how that's impacting their life? Fine. Is it that they already know what the issue is and they want to seek support for that issue, whether it be in their relationship, in their job, in their perception of themselves, in their lifestyle, at school? So there's lots of different things. And generally, once they hit their goals, they're done with their coaching. Or if they want to continue, we have a continuation group as well for accountability and support.
Okay. So I know that learned helplessness can be a big thing with ADHDers. What do you want to say to people who are like, this can't change? This is just how I am.
So this is a really hard one. I think for those people, I kind of just want to give them a hug.
Yeah.
Their perception is their reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know from experience, and I know from all of the people that I've worked with, that there is hope. But also, ADHD is complex. So coaching might not be the right thing for you. Maybe it's not just ADHD. Maybe you need to treat these other underlying conditions that are happening. Yeah. And maybe that's what's getting in your way, not the ADHD itself. So that's why it's so important to get a comprehensive evaluation. But I know not everyone can afford that or have access to that. But if you can, I would start there with, like, a neuropsychological evaluation or psychiatric evaluation, because then you can see what those other things are. Maybe you have bipolar. Maybe it's depression too. Maybe it's thyroidism. Maybe it's, you know, it's so important to know what it is and what the symptoms are so you can treat them correctly. But if you're treating
trauma,
the wrong thing.
Sleep issues. Yeah.
Yes. But if you're treating the wrong thing and you're getting help for the wrong thing, then yeah, you're going to feel like a failure.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, these things deserve care and attention. So yeah, and a hug for sure. Thank you so much for all of this information. It was a total pleasure having you.
Hey, it's Micah. What I'm still trying to get good at in podcasting is saying out loud what I'm noticing in the guest, because if you're not consuming this on YouTube, you can't see it. When I asked Brooke what she wanted to say to ADHDers who were feeling hopeless, she got noticeably emotional. I can tell that this subject, both personally and professionally, is near and dear to her heart. And I wonder if her experience with ADHD, her own diagnosis, has been her greatest teacher, and also makes her a great teacher and coach. She, unknowingly for a while, climbed a few mountains to show other ADHDers that they can be climbed. And I'm grateful I got to share her with you today. Be sure to follow her on social media. That's where I found her, and I have learned so much just by following, at Coaching with Brooke. Emotion regulation is not about controlling what you feel. It's about choosing how you respond. And while people with ADHD do have more difficulty with emotion regulation is tough for everyone in tough conversations with the people that we love the most. My experience with people with ADHD, I find that often they are the canaries in the mine, feeling things and noticing things that a lot of people just don't. There are some sneaky things that get in the way of relationships, things like criticism and defensiveness. And I find that their hypersensitivity makes them really great detectors of sneaky criticism. But it's then knowing what to do with that instead of getting defensive that can make it their superpower or anybody's superpower. So if you can relate to some of the communication issues we talked about today, like being quick to defend or getting stuck in conflicts that go nowhere, I have a free workshop for that called How to Not Get Stuck. You can find all my online workshops at MikaRoss.com, M-I-K-A. And of course, we will put all the links to all the resources we talked about today in the show notes. If you liked today's episode, you have no idea how much it helps us for you to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. So I will be totally grateful and do a for real live happy dance when you do. Thank you so much. You deserve happy relationships.